number of men of our company, General Michael Burke, got to work making the brass heads and springs for the grenades. And about once a fortnight, all of those will be conveyed to the Nakra headquarters. Tom Leanne had a horse that used to be doing road work, and a sidecar, and Tom Leanne and they used to bring out the brass heads and the springs in the, I thought you called it the
well.
Huh?
The well.
In the well of the car. Out was. One day, they started off with their load. One Sunday morning, they started off with their load. And Tom Leanne, and of course, I needn't tell you what horse working on the road is. I tell you, want a good first route for to make him trot, no mind anymore. But they came out anyway, out of the valley bridge, and they turned off there, the fourth road, about 100 yards of the fourth road, only traversed about 100 yards of the fourth road. And they ran right into two lorries, the Camerons coming in for Cove against them. Duggan immediately jumped off the car, pulled off his coat and threw over the horse's head. And here he was, and he was holding the horse, and I mean, oh boy, oh boy, oh boy. And the first lorry stopped, and who got out of it? But Captain Morrison, the intelligence officer, for the battalion. And Duggan, in a usual clever way, had made his acquaintance. And he knew him. He knew Duggan. He moved him. A young horse, Duggan, he said, when he saw Duggan having his coat over the horse's head, first time under the sidecar, Duggan. And then Duggan at the time was treating the captain's dog with a touch of the mange. And how is the little dog, sir? We're getting better, Duggan. Stop those engines. And the Cameron engines, the engines of the two lorries were immediately stopped. Whilst Duggan led his hooded horse and his sidecar and his load of grenade tops past the two lorries and off on the road for Knocklaha. Ned Fitz came home on his Christmas holidays to Nagraha and immediately reported to me for duty. I having already three brothers of his, Pat, Martin and Ned, in the volunteer cells show you of the fourth. I set him over to the factory, which was going in Blossom Grove at the time, and have a look around there and see what if you can find anything to do there. him in the over. He came back to me the following day. Martin, he said, are you in a hurry with those grenades? Okay, I'm still in an awful hurry with them. Oh, you're not going to get them out of that factory, see? The best they'll be able to do out of that, he said, is about 20 grenades a day. But it's wrongly constructed. At the time, the brigade had supplied me with a 4 horsepower engine and a fan for getting a proper blast in the furnace. And I was very disappointed at this. Ned went off. But then they do only go over to Nakraha and consult the Nakraha boys. And then he came back to me, Martin, he said, will you give me your house? My house at the time consisted of a dugout under the name Inch's first break. And there was 3 or 4 bunks in it. No matter, Martin, he said, we'll make one for you. As they did. And I said, you can have it. So he didn't work on it. He constructed his own furnace. And after trying with 2 of the ordinary country fire machines, he couldn't get blast enough out of the 2 fire machines for to melt the metal. So he went off and he got, I wasn't about to say he got him, he didn't steal him anyway. He got 2 machines for cutting cabbage with a big, big wheel in them, and he extended the axle on the wheel of the fire machine and put a big timber pulley in the end of it and had a belt on the timber pulley and around the big wheel of the cabbage machine. And when he put the 2 of them going, he got blast enough for to run the metal. And he amount of it. And he proceeded on that. The result was that with a purely local team of lads, they were turning out 45 grenades a night. Whilst the brigade one, as we used to call the one Blossom Grove, only able to do the greatest number they ever leveled was 25. And it took them only a couple of months when they had another dugout ready for me.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, we get
a
heading for the starting,
no? Very well, you get it for 6 years.
Yeah, it'll be all right.
No, for half until you know. Will you see you? No, I didn't do that originally, Davis.
Oh, it was grand. Yeah, yeah, no, I mean, as you give him our find, it's not fine, he's gone over him again.
No,
fine, no, fine, no, no, acting time.
No, give it again, no.
Give it again, no. It isn't recorded, is it? Right, we're ready to start.
It isn't recorded yet.
No, right. All right, well, you said natter, sir. You said natter. We could have recorded him, we last time. Mm-hmm. Look, start off again. Right, right, no, it's right.
Late John Hogan of Kilquine. When he'd be turning out his cattle every morning, he turned them through the ray, as he used to call it. And there was a corner over in the ray where there was five or six homes where unwanted persons had been buried. And he's walking along the path one day, there was a crucifix on the path right in front of him. And he picked up the crucifix and he looked over at where the homes were and he kissed the crucifix. And he came back. So, but when he coming back, he put back the crucifix where it was on the path. No, we got. He moved the crucifix over and he put it on the home. And went down with his cattle, and he coming back, lo and behold, the crucifix was again on the pad in front of him. And he picked it up and he said a prayer over it. And then he gave a look over it at the homes. And he said, there's some whores, ghosts buried there. And the cross of Christ wouldn't rest easy in his grave. And the cross of Christ wouldn't rest easy in his grave. And he took the crucifix away with him. I think that's the organ. I was above tinning the turnip. That's how what happened with Johnny and the crucifix. And so they took the crucifix off the hump and put it back again in the pad. Up to the day of his death, Johnny firmly believed that that miracle had been performed. Miss Cashman's and that's a Lord. There's an old fort there. And in the mouth of the fort there was a couple of loads of stones in a hole in the fort. So curiosity killed the cat, we gathered all the stones out of it. And we found ourselves faced with a wall. Two walls of a passage. We went into that, we passed along it, we came to a small square hole, had to get through it, and we went into that, we got into a round room. The stones, the flags were laid partly in, all round the room. Another line of flags on top of them, going in still further. And then a coping stone down on the lot. And there was a passage leading from that down to the river. When we flags were covering him. That's in the passage of two stone walls, gray stone walls, in between them. The Thomas started maneuvering with the stones, and one of the flags slipped, and it came down here across Thomas' chest, and he had the wall under him, and he couldn't move up or down, either or over, and we had a terrible job to remove the flag. It was a couple of hours before we got means of removing the flag to have to get Tama out from it. We got in then into a very small hole then, and we got into a little a circular room, built in a circle of dry stone, and then the manner in which that was roofed was there was stone, about half the stone would be in the wall and the other half within, all round. The next one, you had half the stone in again, all round. And then there was a coping stone down top of the lot. So we travelled on through that and we came to a straight passage down, and took us down to the river underneath, and came out below between two big rocks in the river. But you know the drop we got in it, and we didn't know it till after the truth. You get your map. And have a look at the map. You'll find the fucking fort and the fucking hole in the map. We're looking at it as a place that you could make a dugout and have a dugout, don't you see? That'd be a dead safe one. But we got there with nothing safe in it, in the other lane. We came after it and got out on the survey map, and there was the second fort and the hole. And the passage. Sleep in Hogan's loft, in Johnny Hogan's loft. There were three or four getaways out of it. One into the cell, another into the stable, another out the back, down the mangled and out into the haggard. Besides the other door out of the loft. So, dying, I used to be always armed. There is something no arms. Neither Kenneman nor Seamus. She never saw a gun on Seamus. But this night, anyway, I was saying I couldn't sleep. I got a limb free. I got up in the finish. I got out. I started a very bright moonlight night, about 2 o'clock in the morning. I started looking up the road up toward Nagraha. And all of a sudden I saw this fellow come out of the knee house above. You know what, I don't know. There are a lot of them houses there that belong to Manny's, and they were all idle at the time we were talking about. And all of a sudden, I saw this fellow come out. came down the road and turned off at the bridge off of Ballingoig. So I went in there, he was Adam, he was the only fellow that carried his kitten. He said myself, and I walked. How quick is it? Now he came out and he went. We got down cross country. We had Ballingoig Bridge. And down the road we hopped there. Big, able man, he's about 6 feet. He was like a tramp. No grey shirt, grey soldier shirt on him. No raggedy clothes. The only thing peculiar about him was that there was a pair of rings here on him. He was like, for the pocket of the gym, he said, come on, they're up your pal. He didn't speak a word, but he put up his hands. I started questioning him, then they get no answer whatever out of him. I even runs and gave me handy answers. I mean, over the reach anyway, in there into an old quarry of Murphy's there. Questioning him again, he said. Half the court, and removed the old grey soldier shirt. And he had a complete suit of silk underwear under us. And a pocket up here. And a bloody fine watch in the pocket. So he had a long fat pipe with me and 16 rounds of stuff in the pocket. So I did everything. I wrote out the questions for him and everything and handed him a pencil. Shook the head, shook the head, shook the head. Very well, today, that's the way with you. You have 10 minutes, stay there. Make your peace with God as best you can, boy. Then he did yellow, but the way of the bandaging by you. When he spun to go, we shot him at him there, go. The watch was inscribed. And in the truth, I took the watch into Mars. Give it to him. If those fellows don't hear, tell me after you hear that they'd be dropped on the road, the fellow would be dropped on pigeon out, and he one road, and he hosted look. Big fellow to be seen. Good. I'll be dropping another road and do the thing. They'd cover 3 or 5 roads immediately or close down. That's how I made with that. What do you want to do with the money?
Right, always.
Fear not, he's calling. And our wire here. There was about 2 or 3
of
them. How many
people were there?
God, there were 6 of us. Mm-hmm. I saw him from the cinema. He just at the gate into the fire. He came down all of a sudden on the rack. So he tried him in Mike's eggs. And I got him on the gate and he was seeing how the thing come out through the door of the lock. That door of the lock. Just locked and padlocked. He was like about to save a calf, a sucking calf, you know. Black dog. Came out and stood in the top step. He made a grab pocket for the skid. And dying cut me by the hand, I went on fire, so I'm still on fire. He hopped in front of us in the passage and hopped from that over on top of a gate about 50 yards away. And disappeared over that. Well, I wasn't afraid. But I went in through the usual way we went in through the door. and up the trap hole. Gathered the blankets above, came out. And gave them the blankets in the road, outside in the passage. But I could never make half of it twice. I told Peggy's mother about it here after this or so. And she said the place had a nary name. And that she'd say about it.
The man went with the milk, and I thought John fell out. Well, in the meantime, those two gentlemen came to the door, and I met them, and they asked was he, and I said no. So they looked for the names behind the door, and his name wasn't there at all. So they went out, and the man came in and said he was after coming from the northern side, and that they were after firing on him. But that he got away and he dropped his coat and hat. So the next thing is they came, they all came around then, eight or nine of them, and they put the coat and hat up in the gate outside, and they took me out and they asked me, did I know who owned them? And I said, no. And they said, whoever he was, he had a lot of candles in his pocket. Every time after I go, he'd take a candle. So they said he ran from the back of the house, which he didn't, you know. He didn't run from the back of the house at all. He was only coming in. So the next thing I heard then is that he was over in the Stirrells and got away from them. They fired at him, but they didn't get him. And they came in here to me then and they said, we had no right to bring those things. They are useless to us. If we had our rifle, we had him. But with those things, they don't carry far enough and they're no use to us. They were disgusted with him. So.
In my village, I used to come in, and up the bargain. And it was in the bar room, and I saw him, five of them came out of the little grove just back there. Five of them came out of the grove, and five of them were in the village.
They haven't caught only he. They called him to wait, don't you see, and they finished him. He ran from there to wait.
What?
They called him to wait.
No. They didn't call much at all. And he walked along the bar, he coming into the yard, you know. And they came out of the top of the grove and cut down across, making for the gate after me. So, then I waited at first. There might be a couple of the lads from Cove on the run, you know, because it's here they come out with first and then take their directions from here. But, I turned off him. I closed the gate again. The gate came into the yard. I closed that and walked back again along the boreen. They changed their course and they cut down towards me. And then they shouted, "Halt, no boy. You want him?" And they had the skits out of right, but one of them, they didn't fire. Or they made a drive for the ditch.
They fired when they were crossing the field. When they were after crossing up the field here.
Oh, yeah.
They fired in at you.
Oh, you can't then. Have a late for supper.
They couldn't pack there. All hole amok, you know.
They threw the other bar where they crossed below. And when they got out in the boreen, then there was the kitchen. There's a big old lock there, you know, of sewage.
He went away. He went away about 6 o'clock, and that night we had a raid. I always thought there was someone telling, because as sure as he come home, Monsieur Gary seldom did, we'd have a raid immediately after.
Huh?
We always had a raid as soon as we came home. After we went away, we had a raid. Easter Sunday night, we had a raid. I was in bed, and I heard the walking, and when I woke, I thought it was morning, you know, that they were coming to milk the cows. It was dark, and when I looked at the time, it was only 1 o'clock. And the next thing, there was a knock at the door, and I came down. And at that time, we had only candles, you know.
Oh, yes, of course.
And I brought down the candle, and then when I opened the door, they said, "Put out that light, or we'll shoot it out. Get back to bed. Make no unusual noises. Carry on the same as if we weren't here at all." So I went back to bed. And I was sleeping in the inn room that time. And the girl I had was sleeping in the bed behind me, don't you see? We in the room, the same room with me. And they came upstairs and they came into the room. And they looked into her bed and they said, "Is a girl is here?" And they came back and they looked in over me and they said, "Is a girl is here?" Mm-hmm. And they were all in the morning, then in and out of the room and down and out. So in the morning she got, had to get up to milk the cows. And she said to me, "Will you be afraid to stay there?" And I said, "I won't be afraid at all. I'll get up in the minute, but I'll stay here for a while." So I stayed there and you know, she went out. After a while I got up, I came down. And they were here in this room. And they had the dog, whole sheepdog with them. And they were having whiskey and milk. They were after going out for milk. And they had brought whiskey with them. And they were having whiskey and milk. And they remained in for a while. And they were after inspecting the cows and everything. They were open the stall with them. And they looked at the cows. And one of them said his father had so many cows and all this sort of thing. And they went away. And they said nobody leave the house before 9 o'clock. But of course they wouldn't be gone when they'd be out. Yeah, they're a bit of goodness, we had hundreds of rage and never found them very, very bad. They were never bad to me. I had a rage when I was at the end there and on the house myself. And I was upstairs. I was after being sick. And I said to Molly, and she went out to me, "Left the door open, you'd never tell but I'd have a rage." So she left, she didn't let the door open, she pulled it out. And I had a fire upstairs. I was sitting at the fire when the knocking came to the door, and knocking, and I came down and says they were there. They didn't push in the door, all that wasn't closed. So they came in anyhow, and I went up again, and I sat down upstairs, and the officer came in, and he said, "Are you afraid?" I said, "I'm not. I'm not anybody. She ought to know us well enough," he said. And he said, no searching, we'll go away. They were awfully nice to me, you know, the Camerons, but the bloody stairs were awful. No, they were nice to me.
Now it's our past thing gone, you know. We should dug him with like a brother of his.
Right, that's quite
right. The only day they were nice to that he was on bridge. That had all those post office and the rising at the fighting at the post office and all those. Person, all those pictures around, you know. They were pulling them down. And then just like what a horse son would have. Just like what a horse son would have. Not all right.
Oh, yeah.
But that's the only day they were kind of vexed. But indeed I put up with more from the state.
And their murder gang, if you like, than we had here.
And shouldn't we were here, and we were having a race, and did we ever know that? When they weren't going back, they were ringing to keep Hamish below. Was that anything after happening? When Martin came home from jail, his cook came up to see him, Mrs. Kiddy.
Mm-hmm.
And she came up to see him, and she said, "They always rung up us when they, if the men were out too long. No, there was anything after happening." We never knew that, you know.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
Shut the 3 kids below and call.
The 3 kids in the first.
Shut the 3 men through me over Pantareva Bridge.
Mm-hmm. And Barry. And Barry, shut the same on me, yeah, that's correct.
I will go and then I ramble into Murky. And they make him in the hut, in the barrack. Mm. And then Martin, he said they'll be soon going. Christine, are you going to let him go? Are you going to let McIntosh go with him? He was the Martin, he had none of us know him. Yesterday, they took a coat and a hat above off of me one day. And if you will come with me now, say we'll go. I'll go looking for the coat and hat off of them. Truces on, you know. I'll go looking for the coat and hat off of them, saying we'll have a look around, see if we get in touch with the book or anywhere. The Burke came up with me. He was hinting above. And Jesus is Burke. They were after raiding two wagons that was over in the station of stuff that came in.
Working
company were after raiding the two wagons anyway. And they're lovely white shoes. And Bucky carried him and him going up to the barracks. So put me up the road. So we went up and I inquired for Captain Morrison. He's the only fellow we knew that. So we had the two best lines of intelligence that every fellow had. Sergeant Byrne of the RIC. Learned the barracks, Burke at him. Body and bones. And I had Johnny Grandin. Johnny was above in the canteen at the time with him. So we really went up to the huts anyway. I inquired for Captain Morrison. Hi, Jock. Look here, look at my Captain Morrison. Jock went in apparently and found Morrison here. Morrison came out and he was half lame. And down they told him where he was, and Martin Curry said, this is Captain Morrison. So, oh yes, he says. They have brought me into you, so they gave me for a court natural belong to me. Oh, yes. That's the day Sandy fired. Sandy wouldn't hit a bally Eric. That's the way he said it. The Sandy fired. Sandy wouldn't hit a bally Eric. And he said, the lad wore him. He said, Sandy, so the lad wore him, go out and raise and things. They went that way. I give you the best bloody coat and hat you can buy for money in Cork. So give me back the rifles you got off my fellas. Or we were down for the whole lot at heaven. We had 38 rifles belonging to the Camerons the day of the truce. Very
hard.
Hmm? In the hopping, the jumping, no, that's what we had, 38 rifles belonging to the Camerons. So, he was very disappointed in here when he couldn't give me any quarter hat. Anyway, he says, come over and see the Colonel. Colonel will be delighted to meet you now, and all is over. So we went over to see the Colonel, we were McIntosh, I'll be looking for.
I know.
I went over and we had a look around. Knocked at the door. Out comes an orderly. Colonel Cameron in. Yes. I want to see him a moment, please. The lad. Out comes the old Colonel Cameron anyway. I want to introduce you to Corey. I know you'll be glad to meet Corey. Yeah, one bitter look at me. And a lot more welcome for curry than he ran about 6 months ago. And he banged the door, no faces. So, Marson was a gentleman. The big fireman in Scotland, is we were talking about the cows here. But, yeah. Come on down and have a tiddly, says he. Come down to the canteen and have a drink with us. So, Burke and I went down to the canteen with him, and I went down along with the course of the local, where every day the two of us were watching for the buck. And all of a sudden, this big, huge whale of a man stood among the old hut stores. Who he says, Sergeant Major? Sergeant Major came over and said, I want him to juice you to Martin Curry, he says. And the Captain Burke. Sergeant Major the devil is a difficult name, but